Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, what a day it has been. Day four of the Australian Open. Matt and I have just got back after 13 hours on site covering an extraordinary day of tennis. We were both up before the matches even started. Yesterday was a success. Our body clocks are back on track. We were up early enough even to watch the Channel 9 build-up to the day's play, which means pre-10 a.m., David. We were up early enough to watch, I watched a feature entitled Anatomy of an Upset, detailing exactly how Kyrgios was going to pull off the impossible against Medvedev on the Rod Laver Arena this evening. It didn't age brilliantly, folks.
No, I mean, upsets was the theme of the day, just not that one.
Yeah, anatomy of an upset, David. It was a detailed forensic analysis of how Nick Kyrgios plays his best against the best players in the world. And, you know, he's fresh because he hasn't played any tennis in 8 months. And my take on the match, and I didn't watch as much of it as you, David, because there was a lot going on this evening. Matt and I were on the second court watching Emma Raducanu. Plenty more of that later, don't worry. My take on Medvedev Kyrgios, though, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that actually Kyrgios did play his best.
Yeah.
His best is just scraping a set against Daniil Medvedev.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll ever know. I suspect we'll never know throughout his career now whether he's got another level in him which might come of dedication and regular training and having a coach. Those are levels that I think Nick Kyrgios' career will never provide for us to tell us whether that would have been possible. But with what he's got right now, I think he did all of the things that in years gone by we would have said, I hope we see this from Nick Kyrgios. He came out, he was firing, he was dialed in, he was loosening himself up with a few off-pace shots, he was digging into rallies, he was pushing Medvedev, and he even did something I wasn't expecting, which was to win the third set after losing the first two. Didn't expect that, because I felt that showed some real determination and mental strength to carry on and persist, even though two sets slowed down. He made a comeback, and he made it exciting, and the crowd were into it, and they were trying to get under Medvedev's skin, and to some degree they achieved that, and there were some incredible highlight moments. And, you know, my son, who was off school today, wasn't feeling very well, but my word, if it had looked like he did at midway through this match when we said he didn't have to go to school, he'd have been going to school because he was jumping up and down and mimicking Kyrgios and loving all of his tricks and all these sort of things. I thought Kyrgios did really well. But what was most telling, and I didn't get to see his press conference personally, but I did hear him motion to his support team and just say, I can't do any more than I'm doing. I'm hitting 220. Well, if I hit 240, he just sort of motions and just strokes it back as though it's nothing. I'm throwing the kitchen sink at Medvedev. He rates Medvedev so highly. That much is clear. And frankly, he's got every right to.
Best hardcourt player in the world, Nick Kyrgios called Medvedev after the match. I mean, that is kind of his style, isn't it? That's what Nick Kyrgios does after losses. He says the guy he's lost to is the best player in the world. But Daniil Medvedev very well might be the best player in the world at this particular moment. Obviously, according to the rankings, and the rankings don't lie, over the last 12 months, Novak Djokovic has been the best player in the world. Rather ironically, the most circusy, aggro-tastic moment of the whole match came from Daniil Medvedev in the post-match interview. I waited 4 minutes, folks, before I got on to the Medvedev post-match interview. I hope we can all agree that I've been extremely restrained. Matt, talk us through it. Help me relive the glory that was Medvedev, Courier, everything that ensued.
Well, we were on the second court, weren't we? And to get from the second court back to the press centre, you quite conveniently have to walk past the Rod Laver Arena. And we saw that it was 5-2 to Medvedev in the fourth set. He was closing in on victory. And we ummed and ahed, didn't we, about whether it was worth going in to see the end, because it, you know, presumably we were just going to be there for a game or two. But then we remembered Medvedev and the potential for interview aggro, and we made some good decisions today. That was the best decision we made all day, to get in the stadium to witness that. I'm trying to remember how it went. Jim Courier asked him quite a open first question, didn't he? Something, I can't quite remember what the question was, but it was just sort of general thoughts on the match and how you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was boilerplate first question. And Medvedev went dead-eyed stare, stone-cold one-liner answer. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I won.
And it was a moment of, oh, it's going to be that kind of interview. Excellent.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I grabbed my popcorn instantly, and it really was that kind of interview, wasn't it? The suing, the booing, the suing, the whatever it is, it's continued. Mm. Sadly,
incidentally, I was watching the Andy Murray match with my daughter before she went to school, and 2 points in, she said, "Why are they booing?" And I said, "Apparently, they're not booing. They're doing that thing that Ronaldo does, that your brother's always doing when he's trying to pretend to be Ronaldo or whatever when he scored a goal." And she said, "Oh, I know. It's what boys do to communicate with each other, isn't it? On the bus, then they're just morons." And I said, "Yeah, that's basically it." Yeah.
Oh, she's paraphrased Daniil Medvedev perfectly there. It sounds like she said what Daniil Medvedev did before he said it. I mean, look, I completely agree as well. I've been trying to put my finger on why I hate it so much, because, you know, I love aggro, clearly, love atmosphere. You know, I really don't mind drunk Australians in a crowd being a bit silly. I don't mind the occasional naff come on Tim at Wimbledon. You know, I'm into all sorts of crowd vibes. And I really don't like this. And it's something about the fact that it is exclusively male. Mm. I mean, maybe there's the odd female voice in there being drowned out, but it certainly sounds exclusively male, exclusively just a certain demographic of male that feels so sort of tired and toxic masculinity somehow. It just...
And, get a life, and they lads. All, get a life.
Yeah, get a life. They all think it's so cool and clever, and it's just not.
Jim Courier had to explain it to Daniil Medvedev on the court as well. The fact that all these players, they don't know what's going on. They're mistaking it for booing. Yeah, it's just rubbish. Just stop doing it, right?
And Medvedev was really irritated by it. There was a different energy to his sort of goading of the crowd in that on-court interview. It was from a place of irritation. You know, the fact that they were doing it between first and second serves as well is, I think, the thing which annoyed him the most about it. And, Yeah, and then when he started saying, "Guys, I can't hear Jim Courier. He's a 2-time champion. You got to respect him. I can't hear him." That was That was great.
He said, "At least respect Jim Courier. He won here." It was brilliant. And then very quickly after he went off court, footage started circulating on social media of the interview he'd done just off court, the flash interview with Eurosport, which had run in a number of different countries, where he was asked again about the not booing, and he, you know, again expressed his irritation with it, and he concluded with the mic drop moment of, "Look, I mean, it's not everyone. I just guess the ones that are doing it have a low IQ," which
I'm using daily from now on.
Yeah, I can't remember what I said earlier to Matt. Like, "Oh, that's annoying, isn't it?" And Matt went, "Yeah, must just have a low IQ." It's catch-all, very transferable. So that's Daniil Medvedev. I mean, just fundamentally a far superior tennis player today. He had calmed down a bit, I think, by the time he came to press. He gave a good press conference. He always does. But I think we were expecting / hoping for some more digs. And he was awfully mature.
It is interesting, though, how, I mean, my wife was watching it and she was also hoping Kyrgios wins, you know, enjoying the match and that through that lens, and not into Medvedev, doesn't know Medvedev, has never heard him talk before. And then at the end of the match, she heard all this and it turned her view. She thought he was funny. She thought he was quite charming in his own way, the way he can be, you know. And I think that is the theme, really. I think people discover him as things go along. And yeah, he's the sort of player that Kyrgios kind of could have beaten, I think. But Medvedev is maximising.
What time you had in the Law household today? Yeah. Off school, watching the tennis as a family. That's brilliant.
Yeah, what a day. Medvedev faces Burtik van der Zandschulp next. Medvedev, I think, is the only player on tour that can pronounce van der Zandschulp's name. He taught me how to pronounce it, in fact. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to see him losing that. It's hard to see him losing to anybody other than someone that just, you know, puts in the performance of their life at the moment. But
who got a set off Medvedev at the US Open, wasn't he? I mean, I'm not sure that necessarily tells us that he's going to threaten Medvedev more than most, but it was unusual match for Medvedev, that at the US Open. He had a real offset after crushing him, and I just don't see that happening again. He's more experienced. He talks a lot about the experience he's gained from the US Open. He's navigating his way through draws. I thought that was brilliant, the way he just didn't get involved with the crowd today during the match. There was not a flicker from him at all. He just played it straight and did what he had to do. And yeah, I think he probably could have engaged the crowd a bit more and still won, but he realized what the best course for him was and just knows himself better and better as a tennis player, I think, Medvedev.
So why were Matt and I not watching Nick Kyrgios against Daniil Medvedev? Well, that's because we were, as we said, on the second court, watching Emma Raducanu battle it out against Danka Kovacic. This match was wild. It was all sorts of craziness, folks. Fantastically entertaining. I tried to get there for the start of the match, just missed the first ball. And of course, that meant I spent 3 games, you know, laptop in arm, bag in another arm, water bottle dangling off one of my fingertips, trying to look over a bunch of David Law height heads to see a screen while I'm waiting outside a door to get into the match. Anyway, luckily those first 3 games didn't last very long, because Raducanu just, you know, I sent a text to the group saying, "Oh, Raducanu's just doing it again." 3 love up, she goes, and it's a double break. She's serving at 3 love. It all just looks a dream. And then she wins 5 points in the next 5 games. And during that time, she gets a medical timeout. for a blister on her racket hand on her right hand, and it's clear that it's an extremely nasty blister. I have to say, Matt and I did raise an eyebrow in her first match against Sloane Stephens. She was shaking out her hand a lot. And obviously she ended up winning that match, playing really well. So, you know, we put those concerns to the back of our mind. Well, they were very much at the front of our mind at this point in this match. And then the trainer comes on and all becomes clear. Following the visit of the trainer late on in the first set, which she loses, Emma Raducanu starts hitting exclusively sliced forehands. Exclusively. And Kovanec, in a sort of brain scramble type situation, is just unable to cope with it. It was like computer error or something. It was so, so interesting. Emma Raducanu won that set of tennis with only a sliced forehand. And it was, look, she lost the match. It was too much to try and win that match. She did start trying to hit over the forehand in the third set, but there wasn't nearly enough as much power on it as usual, and she would generally hit one topspin and then have to revert back to the slice forehand. So by and large, she played most of that match with just a slice forehand, and it was too much to actually win it. And Danka Kovanec did get herself together and sort of formulate a plan, I think, for how to play this completely bizarre player, completely different to who she had prepped for. I mean, it was a little bit of Bianca Andreescu in there. It was genuinely, and we learned this from Raducanu's press conference, skills that she didn't know she had. She was quite upbeat in press because she really learned something great about herself today. And I think we all did too.
Yeah, it was a bit of Bianca Andreescu. It was a lot of Monica Niculescu. The way she was slicing that forehand because she had to. And the thing which I kept thinking of during the match is a Billie Jean King-ism, champions adjust. That is what Billie Jean King always says, that champions, you know, they share that ability. And Raducanu made a mid-match adjustment. You know, look, she went onto court with the blisters, and she said in her press conference that some members of her team didn't think she should even be playing the match, I guess for fear of making it worse or the fact that she wouldn't be able to compete because they were so bad. But I don't think she went on the court expecting to have to hit exclusively sliced forehands, because it just got to a point where it was so bad that was all she could do. And yeah, she really did have a good perspective on it in her press conference. Obviously, she was gutted to have lost, but she did win something today. She discovered and learned something about herself, something that she can do that she didn't realize she could do. That was a shitty situation for her to have to play with blisters like that. And she could have just retired, or she could have sulked over it. And those would have been understandable reactions, frankly. But she didn't. She found a different method, a different way of playing, and embraced it. And she was, you know, smiling and laughing when she was getting it right. She had such a good approach the whole match, and she carried that into her press conference, such a mature perspective on it. And yeah, okay, she lost, but yet again, it was another performance which was engrossing to watch and made you feel really, really good about Raducanu's the tennis player and also her future prospects, because not many players could have done that, I don't Mm-mm. think. That was pretty special what she did, even in defeat.
Mm. I feel so positive about what I saw tonight from Raducanu. Really more positive than if she'd just, you know, blasted Kovanec away tonight, which I think a lot of people are expecting. We're all getting ahead of ourselves for a Raducanu Halep third round, which obviously would have been a dream, but I think one of the final questions of the press conference, I think it was from Simon Briggs, actually, who Matt and I shared dinner with while watching the latter stages of the Raducanu match. We had crocodile tail and chips for dinner, the three of us, in the press box.
You?
It was all right.
It was all right, yeah. Yeah, it's... yeah. It was all right. I'm not going to say it was a bit like chicken, but it was a little bit like chicken, just slightly less nice. But fine. Anyway, Simon was into it. Very glad of it. Anyway.
His laptop less glad because
yes,
his laptop's now of a sticky mess.
There was aioli everywhere. Anyway, I think it was Simon's question to Raducanu in press. You know, is there a little part of you that's relieved you didn't somehow by hook or by crook find a way through that match, because you'd only have to go out and face a former world number one in 2 days still with this blister? And she did give a bit of a smile and say, yeah, there's, you're not beating Simona Halep with a sliced forehand, which is incredible perspective. You know, of course, if she'd found a way, she would have relished it and loved it and given her best and all of that. But, you know, she's a Grand Slam champion now. And to go into matches, there's pride at stake, you know. So, yeah, I'm so impressed with her today. I don't think the blister thing is a worry. She had 21 days without playing tennis, and she said, my hands had become soft. That's how she described it. And she said her immediate plan now is to try and make up some of the off-season training that she lost out on during those 21 days when she contracted COVID and had to go into isolation in Abu Dhabi. So, look, she's saying all the right things. Please just give her time. This is a positive step for Emma Raducanu. And I feel really positive about her tonight. And that's a good place to be. Incidentally, Danka Kovanić is the first ever Montenegrin to reach the third round of a slam. So that's a good news story. And she will face Simona Halep, who breezed past Beatriz Haddad-Maier tonight. Also in the night session, what did we have? We had Jannik Sinner, who had to come onto court after Emma Raducanu, and he was quick to get off court very quickly. Steve Johnson was his victim tonight. So we'll have Jannik Sinner against Taro Daniel in the third round. That's because Taro Daniel, frankly, very comfortably beat Andy Murray today in a really just routine, uneventful straight sets win out on the John Cain Arena. Taro Daniel's come through qualifying. He was so sharp today, so sharp. And that sharpness highlighted the dullness of Andy Murray, if you like. He was fuzzy around the edges in every respect. And with a game like his where you just get nothing for free. It never felt on today, David.
No, it didn't. I mean, he had his little moments where he'd get back into a set and you'd think maybe this is the moment it ignites. But no, I don't know what he said about it afterwards, but his body language was one of immense frustration, it seemed, that it just wasn't there. And you're right, his opponent, I was not expecting that from Taro Daniel. I knew he'd qualified, but he's been around for a while. Didn't know he'd got that sort of game that was pretty spiteful out there. And he was too much for Andy Murray. Really nice interview with him, by the way, on the court afterwards, which made me smile. I mean, he inadvertently swore in the middle of it just because he sort of looked so overwhelmed by the moment, you know. But he was endearing, and it showed what a moment, what a making of him it was. Sort of, oh, I can't believe I'm out in front of all these people, is basically what he said. You know, we've had all this time where, you know, it quite clearly he plays in front of not many people a lot of the time, and suddenly he's the centre of attention. And he was a bit nervous, more nervous in the interview afterwards than I think he was in the match as he was playing. until that third set. And his celebration on match point was to sort of shake his hands as if to say, I was so nervous. I was so tight to try and get over that line. But, you know, he got the job done. I definitely feel a lot more positive about having watched Raducanu's performance than I did about Murray's, which there may well be reasons that you can tell me about from what Murray said, but I didn't feel particularly encouraged by what I saw there.
He said that he felt decent physically. He said he actually pulled up okay after the Basilashvili match. That was my big worry, because I thought he looked pretty lethargic and sort of laboured at the end of that one. But he said he felt okay, and that wasn't so much the problem. He just said he just played badly. And he did say he's got this new racket, which does take a bit of time to sort of break into, but he wasn't using that as an excuse by any means. He was at a bit of a loss to explain how badly he played, actually, and he was deeply irritated by it, because, you know, he pointed out he's never lost to someone ranked outside of the top 100 in a slam before, as Taro Daniel is, you know, by ranking, it's his worst ever defeat at a Grand Slam. And, you know, for someone who, I think this next period of his career, he needs to see progress. He needs to see little wins along the way to keep him motivated and keep him going. And he justified
being away from home and all that.
Mm.
Absolutely. And he said, you know, he was really emotional in Sydney, wasn't he, when he mentioned his family. And he said in the press conference today that there's been some illness in the family at home in the last week, and it's been extra difficult being away. And yeah, I think he said after the Shapovalov defeat at Wimbledon, didn't he? He doesn't want to be losing like that to Shapovalov going forward. He's got no interest in that, and he's got no interest in losing round two to Taro Daniel at the Australian Open either. So yeah, I think I've been pretty positive on Andy Murray for the last 6 months, really, but this is probably the first time where I've thought, that wasn't great, really. And I think he feels similarly, to be honest.
Same. I was expecting him to say, look, I just couldn't handle it physically after Basilashvili and the run in Sydney, and had that run to the final in Sydney been the week previous, had it not been the week before the slam, then things could have been different. But yeah, I did find those comments a bit alarming. It's going to be interesting. I think the next few weeks are going to be interesting for Andy Murray. Let's go back, shall we, to the very start of the day. This is a very sort of scattergun podcast. We started at the end of the day, but I simply had to bring you news of our lovely dinner with Simon Briggs, eating crocodile tail at the earliest possible opportunity. But let's go back to the start of the day, which feels like a lifetime ago. But we kicked off the day with two tremendous upsets, really. Not just in terms of seeds, but I'm looking in particular at Garbini Muguruza here, which I am so shocked that she lost that match today. I don't understand it. Elise Cornet is a good player. I know she had that one big win over Serena Williams at Wimbledon, wasn't it, a few years ago? But I don't associate her with big wins. You know, I think of her as having a level and being there, being around. And I think she's indicated that this might even be her final year on tour. I just, you know, Muguruza just seems so comfortable and happy and just at ease. I just don't know where this result came from today.
No, me neither. I've been really bullish on Muguruza's prospects this tournament. I've even dragged Catherine into being bullish on Muguruza as well. And look, I think there was plenty of reason to be. She was the Guadalajara champion. She reached the final here a couple of years ago, and last year she had match point against the eventual champion. She's played well recently in Australia. This was a bizarre performance, really. I mean, look, Cornet did all the things Cornet does and played well. She tried to get under Muguruza's skin a little bit. She defended brilliantly. She served really well. She hit some brilliant passing shots. Her energy levels were really good throughout the entire match. It was an excellent Elise Cornet performance. But Muguruza was flat, really flat, never got herself going. Her legs looked a bit sort of slow and heavy to me. She wasn't getting to the ball in time. Her return was so bad. I mean, she didn't create a break point in the entire match. And whenever she did lift her level, you know, it was when she was already down in a game. You know, she wasn't doing it on any of the important points, so she couldn't really apply pressure. She couldn't get momentum. It was bizarre. And I think, again, she was a bit lost of in terms of trying to explain how it happened. She did mention something I didn't know, that her team had COVID during the off season, which meant she had to train on her own for 15 days, you know, without them. And she said that did set her back. It wasn't the same. So her preparation coming in wasn't quite what she wanted it to be. But at the same time, I still think it was just a letdown of a performance, really. And she did have the game in her to beat Elise Cornet. She just couldn't find it.
I think the best thing about Muguruza's performance today was what she said in press afterwards, which was when asked to comment on her opponent and how she thought Elise Cornet could now go on to progress through the tournament. She said, "Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say much about that. Good luck," which is just fantastic. So while Matt was watching that on the Rod Laver Arena, I was on the second court watching Annette Contaveit against Clara Towson. Yes, David, we're about to talk about Clara Towson. I've watched her live for the very first time. I'd never seen her play before. I think 2 years ago, the last time I was at a Grand Slam. I'm sure Matt knew who Clara Towson was because she'd won the junior title the year before, hadn't she? And, you know, Matt's always got his eyes on prospects. So we'd have heard her name, but we definitely wouldn't have seen her play. And she won really comfortably today against Annette Contaveit. And the fact of her winning, I don't think, is a tremendous surprise. We know the talent of Clara Towson. David predicted this win in the newsletter. But I think everybody had an eye on this match as a potential upset because Towson is that good. The manner of the defeat for Contaveit really did surprise me. She did not play smart tennis at all. She seemed almost put out to me that Clara Towson had so much more power than her and was sort of determined to try and make a point about her own power. Rather than, I mean, clearly, I know it's very easy for me to say, sitting from my shady press box seat, loving life up there. But clearly the thing you need to do with Towson is get her on the move. I mean, if it's a standing still hitting contest, I think Towson is going to beat everybody on tour every day. Maybe not Sabalenka. So you just got to get her out of position, get her on the move. And it felt to me like Contaveit was just hitting the ball back to her and trying to give as good as she got, which was just never going to work. And she was, yeah, she seemed nose out of joint to me. And I was sitting not far away from Dmitry Tursunov, who did not look like he had an enjoyable afternoon in store to me. He rushed out of his seat very quickly after that defeat. But hey, Clara Towson is extremely good. She's fantastic to watch. The ease with which she produces that breathtaking power is something to behold. And she now, David, faces Danielle Collins.
Ooh. That'd be very interesting to see whether she's able to invoke those tactics you discuss about how to beat Towson, because my first exposure to Towson was that match against Jennifer Brady when I'd picked Brady to win the French Open a couple of years ago or a year and a half ago. And Towson's power on that day was overwhelming, and that's what Brady was trying to do. She was trying to hit her off the court as if it was an affront to be faced by this.
That's the word I've been looking for, David.
To be faced by this young player who's actually got a bigger forehand than she has, and she'd also got a massive backhand too. I mean, it's worth remembering that Towson beat Emma Raducanu just before the U.S. Open this last year, and. You know, that was in a 125 event, sort of challenger-type tournament. And I think Towson was put out a little bit by Raducanu winning the US Open and getting all this attention. But using it in a positive way, I think she is ready to be the next one to come along and take some limelight. And Daniel Collins, you'd expect probably Collins to have a bit too much nous for her. But I don't know, Towson's going to get there. It's just when, not if.
Yeah, it's like she's seen what Raducanu did. And also Leila Fernandez. You know, Leila Fernandez, also a teenager, getting to the US Open final. And not in an angry way, but has just thought, huh, that opportunity is there. This is something that happens in tennis. That can be me next. I beat Raducanu just before the US Open. And I think it wouldn't be anywhere near as surprising if Towson did progress through this draw, because we've seen her weapons in the past. We've seen her trouble top players. I thought she gave a funny quote in the post-match press conference. It reminded me of when David Moyes spoke about Man U, and he said, we had problems in some areas. We weren't very good at defending. We couldn't create chances. We couldn't keep the ball, and we couldn't score goals. He basically said problems in all the areas. And this was the opposite. This was Towson saying, yeah, I thought my forehand was good. I thought my backhand was good. I thought my serve was good. And I thought I volleyed well. It was kind of like she really rated her own performance.
That she said she basically ignored what her coach had told her to do because she was just feeling so good?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She said, I had a plan, didn't follow it because everything was going so well.
I love that, though. Instinct player. Like it a lot. I mean, obviously, you only do that if your instincts are good. Some players, I would say, go with your instincts less. So what did I do, David, after I'd just seen Clara Towson safely through to round three for you? I relocated to court number 13, which is pretty far away from everywhere, to watch Maxime Cressy for you. Now, this was my first time watching Maxime Cressy as well. It's my first time watching Thomas Machac, I think is the correct pronunciation. You might remember that name from the Davis Cup at the end of last year, the Davis Cup finals, where he beat Dan Evans, put in some really good performances. Matt then came to join me in the Maxime Cressy Club. And I think, Matt, you'll join me in confirming to David that we're in. We are all in. We're with you. We're all about Maxime Cressy.
Yeah, we liked what we saw.
What did you like?
Lots of things. We particularly liked, I would say, his ease and his calmness at the net. You know, because Machac, just as you thought he would, David, put in a lot of pretty good passing shot attempts and kept the ball low a lot. And force Cressy to hit difficult volleys a lot of the time. And yet he didn't panic. He didn't fluster. He just has an ability to use his hands and do what he wants to do at the net, really. I mean, as soon as he gets up there, he is in control, it feels like. And the way he knocks off volleys just at the first go was really striking as well. You know, he didn't even need to set them up a lot of the time. He just put them away. So ruthlessly and efficiently, and also his demeanor on court, I think, was pretty impressive. You know, there was a tiny moment when he served for the match at the end of the fourth set and got broken and then had to win it in a tie break, but that was the only sort of flicker of frustration and looking over to his box. The rest of the time he's pretty much, he seems
a real grown-up.
Playing for himself out there and sorting it out himself, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I found him really impressive. The touch and the feel on the backhand volley in particular is glorious. Really lovely. And he moves well for a big guy. Moves really well. Doesn't look sort of awkward and laboured as it sometimes can when you're watching, no offence, David, the larger gentleman.
He's very lithe.
Lithe, I mean, yes.
I'm quite happy to be lumbered in with the large gentleman typical mover. But no, I think you're right. I mean, I watched quite a bit of that, and Mahak at one stage, I think he was 6-5 and 30 love down in the fourth set, and reeled off 4 points in a row to break Cressy and get it into a tiebreak. Just stunning passing shots, really. But Cressy doesn't panic. Like you say, he's a grown up. He's gone through the college system. He's understood that there's going to be bumps in the road, and he's so committed to this approach of tennis that I think it's sort of simplified in his mind. It's a personal decision that he's taken that this is him as a tennis player, and through rough and smooth. And it will be fascinating. I mean, he really admires Pat Rafter, his inspiration. And Rafter always used to say, look, this is my game. I'm coming in. If you can get past me, fine. If you can get over me, fine. But I'm coming. And I enjoy that, as long as he's not playing John Isner.
Well, he's playing Aussie Chris O'Connell, David, for a place in the second week of the Australian Open. All due respect to Chris O'Connell, brilliant win for him today in straight sets over Diego Schwartzman. But Chris O'Connell for a place in round four of a slam is a good draw. Things are looking good for Maxime Cressy fans, I would say, which is, I think, all of us now. We're in. It's a club.
Confirmed.
While we were watching Maxime Cressy in the other universe of court number 13, Matt was trying to create a multi-screen situation because there was Sabalenka double fault watch happening at that time, and Matt was checking after every point of the match that we were watching to see whether the double fault count on the second court had racked up, because Aryna Sabalenka, goodness me, she's going through it on those service yips. She served 12 double faults in the first set alone.
Six of those in the first game.
Six in the first game. And she lost that first set, folks. Six games to one to Wang Jingyu. And look, it was pretty ugly, a lot of this match today, but Aryna Sabalenka somehow won it. And as many negatives as there were, I'm really impressed that Aryna Sabalenka won that match, because perhaps grit is one of the things that has been missing from what we've seen from her in the big Grand Slam matches. And okay, she hasn't played a really big one yet, but kind of feels like they're all big. She has felt in jeopardy every step of the way so far. You know, if you told me at the start of today there's going to be big upsets, she'd have been my first name on the list. I can't believe Muguruza's gone and Sabalenka is still standing somehow. You know, Pam Shriver said on the ESPN coverage at the end of the first set that, based on what I know of the yips, Sabalenka should have gone home to work on it instead of coming to Melbourne.
Yes, because I thought, you know, six double faults in the opening game after you've revealed that Mark Philippoussis has been helping you with your serve is sort of throwing Mark Philippoussis under the bus a bit. It's sort of suggesting that, you know, his serving advice isn't working. But actually, I think there's such a ingrained problem there that it's going to take quite a lot of work and a lot of time for Sabalenka to get over these yips, and just one session with whoever it is not going to be enough to solve them. But I actually think it's probably the most impressive win of the day, actually, Sabalenka. She's missing a fundamental element of her game, and actually it's a fundamental element of her game which has become a real weakness for her. And yet, you know, and that weakness she thinks, she said herself, is mental. And yet the mental strength it then takes to overcome that and still manage to win and still manage to compete hard is incredible, I think. I think she showed a lot today. And I must say, I do think she's often battled hard in the big matches, and she's just maybe got things wrong tactically or not had the ability to switch things up, perhaps. But I never doubt her intensity and her fight and her desire, and she showed all of that today and more. And I thought that was a real credit to herself that she managed to pull herself through. And she did similarly in the first round as well. You know, she's done it twice now. It's an impressive little run from Sabalenka, even though, as you said, a lot of the tennis she's actually played has been really not very impressive.
Yeah, I just wanted to say we had an email from somebody who entitled it "Sabalenka is an Inspiration" and just said, "Friend of the pod, Jimmy here. Consider how much courage it takes to come on court in this situation. You're supposed to be the number two player in the world and you can't get a serve in, and she does it anyway." And I thought, what a great way of putting it, actually. Yeah. That was right in the middle of the match, actually, when she was going through all this, and she's getting people making fun of her, really. And it made me think, what a good way of putting it, actually.
I really agree with that, actually. You know, you've got to put a lot of ego aside to step out there as the second player in the world and know that you're going to go through that. Yeah, very, very well said. She faces Marketa Vondroušová next. I'm not even going to bother speculating about what on earth might happen in that match, because Vondroušová is just, she's the predictions banana skin. You just don't know what she's going to do ever. What else did we have today? Andre Rublev won. He beat Ricardo Berankis. Pavlyuchenkova won. She ended Sam Stosur's singles career. Really nice scene out on the Kia Arena. The ceremony for Sam Stosur to mark the end of her singles career at her 20th Australian Open. She is going to continue playing the season in doubles. And I've mentioned Pavlyuchenkova and Rublev together because they are my favourite sort of hashtag Tennis United pairing. And Tennis Australia released a video of the two of them making pavlova together today, and I found it very enjoyable. Iga Swiatek is just, she's in that cruise mode that she has. She's barely losing games at the moment. She beat Rebecca Peterson today, now plays Kazakhina.
Yes, that's a yes, please, isn't it? Mm. It was interesting because that match against Peterson was happening while the sort of chaos was going on Rod Laver Arena, with Garbiñe Muguruza losing and Kontaveit losing on the second court. And Świątek just avoided all of that drama. She just ruthlessly won. And I thought something interesting she said in press this week is that she's been working on her strength. You know, she's got a new coach now, and what they're doing is working on strengths. And she said, because I have a tendency to overthink on the court, and if you're more and more confident in your strengths, it just simplifies tennis. And those score lines suggest that she's thinking pretty clearly out on the court, and it's a really, really good start for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Just wrapping up the women's draw today. We lost Elena Rybakina. It was a really tough scene out in the John Cain Arena. For me as well in the press room, because I had gone big on Rybakina in my predictions. She had to retire with that knee injury that we mentioned that she was troubled by in the previous round against Serena Diaz. She had to retire in the second set, so Zheng Shuai goes through to face Elise Mertens. It was tough. She was a titleist a couple of weeks ago. No, finalist, wasn't she, Elena Rybakina? She knew she was in great form, and I feel for her because she's always on the cusp of something, isn't she? She was just on the cusp of something, and then a global pandemic hit, and then she's just on the cusp of something here, and this knee injury hit, and she tried to play on, and I think played 2 points and called it a day, and it's just really sad to see for Rybakina. So I hope she gets, a good run at things soon, because she deserves it. Couple of other results to wrap up the men's draw. Stefanos Tsitsipas, I'm conscious that we really haven't talked about him. 4 sets for him over Sebastian Baez of Argentina, who was injured by the end of the match. I don't know what to make of Tsitsipas or where he's at. I haven't watched that much of him. He's weirdly a bit under the radar, actually, in some ways.
Yeah, he is, actually. Maybe it's because he's playing on the same day as Medvedev, perhaps. And I don't know. My attention kind of goes to Medvedev. I think lots of people would probably feel the same. He described his win as a lot of fighting and a little bit of swearing, which I thought was quite a good summary. He was frustrated. He said it took him quite a bit of time to work out Baez, someone he'd never played before. It's just quite a tricky game, I think. I asked him straight up, "How's your elbow?" And he said, "Fine." He said, it's not troubled me since Sydney. It is fine. And he didn't need any treatment or anything like that. So it's a good sign, because that's my biggest worry about Tsitsipas. I do think, other than that, the game can be there. So maybe he's in a better place than it... than it sort of feels like.
I've dropped a clanger, then, is what you're saying, by not having him in my quarterfinals.
I haven't got him in there either, David.
None of us do, David.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you can only work with the information in front of you.
I had him losing to Taylor Fritz in round 4, which is a match that's still on course to happen. Fritz beat Tiafo today in 3 sets, which is a big win. Little wobble from him. He double-faulted serving... at a match point, serving for the match, but then he wrapped it up in the third set tiebreak. So they're on a little collision course. That Tiafoe-Fritz match, I think it was, we didn't get to see that much of it. 3 very competitive sets, I think, for those 3. I mean, so striking the difference in physique between those 2. I mean, one of them has been playing a lot of golf and the other one's been playing less golf, I would say. But yeah, Taylor Fritz looking good, and I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, we're all thinking vaguely the same thing. So Fritz now faces Roberto Bautista Agut, and Tsitsipas faces Benoit Paire, who's unexpectedly doing a thing. He's having a run. He's beaten Grigor Dimitrov. He's got this extraordinary head-to-head, I think, with Grigor Dimitrov, hasn't he? He's beaten him 4 times. So who knows? Maybe it's just one of those quirky head-to-heads, or maybe Benoit Paire is ready to finally fulfil all his talent. Anyone want to speculate about whether that's the case? Is he going to challenge Tsitsipas?
Happy to take it in its own isolation, that particular match, just not try to read anything into it whatsoever.
Understood, David, understood. Pablo Andujar, the movement killer, he has reached round 3 at the Australian Open for the first time, aged 35. And I think that deserves a little bit of a round of applause. And he faces Alex de Minaur next. So he's got the chance to do some more movement killing.
First time Alex de Minaur had won a match on the Rod Laver Arena today, which that was a big moment for him.
And
I
Matt
think.
Was the only person that showed up for his press conference.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really?
Great Aussie hope. I know.
Wow. That does surprise me.
Yeah.
How did that conversation go, Matt?
This is where I say find out in the newsletter.
Ooh.
But it was very nice. It was very nice.
Yeah, sign up then.
We didn't plan that, folks. Last match I think that we want to mention is Felix Auger-Aliassime against Alejandro Davidovich Fokina on the Kia Arena. My goodness me, this was grueling. I mean, Matt and I went out to watch a short portion of it and that was grueling enough. Then Matt went out for a second stint, and that sounded grueling. And then the match seemed to go on for another sort of 7 hours after that. And it was only four sets. Goodness knows what would have happened if Alejandro Davidovich Fokina had managed to take it into a fifth, which could have happened. Four tiebreak sets it was, wasn't it? Marathon stuff. And I know Felix Auger-Aliassime is an extraordinary physical specimen, but he has had serious court time to get to this point.
Yeah, and played right in the heat of the day. It was hot today at Melbourne Park, and this was, you know, in the baking sun for 4+ hours. I found it interesting. I remember we commented on Auger-Aliassime against Bautista Agut at ATP Cup and how good Auger-Aliassime looked and how secure he looked. He wasn't making the sort of same errors that he often makes. And I really thought maybe that sort of playing someone with that rhythm helped him. But he's played two players here who give him rhythm, Rusevori and Davidovich Fokina. They're baseliners. He's had rhythm. And yet I've watched quite a lot of him and he is spraying the ball. You do not know what is coming off his racket. It's either a sweet connection with a perfect pop and it looks brilliant, it's sort of mesmerizing, or it's a shank and it's going, you know, 10 feet long. And it's a real mix at the moment. And I do think perhaps, though, Davidovich Fokina and Rusevori both have firepower. And I think he's been wary of that. And I think he's been trying to pull the trigger a little bit, perhaps, when he shouldn't be. Very different style of with his next match against Dan Evans, who didn't have to play today. Arthur Rinderknecht withdrew with a wrist injury. So, you know, couldn't be more contrasting circumstances for those two. Felix, about 8 hours court time in two matches. Dan Evans, very fresh, having had a day off. Sometimes that doesn't help. You know, sometimes that can actually hurt a player. So that's an interesting third round, but gosh, Felix has had to battle through, and his celebration afterwards was as big as you see from Felix Auger-Aliassime. He was buzzing to have won that today. He really was.
Felix Auger-Aliassime against Dan Evans is a match that I can definitely get excited about. That'll be in a couple of days' time. The schedule for tomorrow is tasty. It's very tasty indeed, David. There is a lot of this that you're not going to be allowed to watch because it's happening in the middle of the night. And if I see you tweeting at 3 o'clock in the morning again, there is not going to be a podcast tomorrow. Those are the rules.
David's going to need to start a burner account or something.
Yeah. I mean, close your ears for this schedule, David, because you're not allowed to watch any of it until the night session, okay? Azarenka against Svitolina first up on Rod Laver Arena. We'll let you know the result in the podcast, David. Okay. Krejcikova against Ostapenko up next. And then in likely sensational match that you're not allowed to watch news, David, Alcaraz.
I think you can watch some of this.
Alcaraz against Berrettini. Look.
Oh, I'm watching that.
If it goes long, you can watch the end, okay?
Well, can you make the others go longer and then I can...
Hey, can I tell you, David, that the bookies have Alcaraz as the favourite for that, which I think is silly.
That is silly, isn't it? I mean, I would pick him to win it, but I don't, on paper, that I'm very, very surprised. They're scared
they've
of
heard,
Alcaraz.
They've heard about your big Calendar Slam prediction. At night session, you're allowed to watch as much of this as you like, David. Ash Barty against Camilla Giorgi first up, and then Karen Khachanov against Rafael Nadal is the second match on Rod Laver. Second court, we have Jessica Pegula opening things up. Then it's Badosa Kostiuk, which I'm really looking forward to that match. Mm. I think that could be very interesting. And then Riley Opelka against Denis Shapovalov. Night session. Here we go, David. You can glory in this. You can bathe in it. Anisimova against Osaka.
Yeah,
and then Karatsev Manarino.
No,
that was, you can have a nibble on that if you like.
That was one of the things we noticed when we were out watching Maxime Cressy do his thing on the courts behind us. We had Amanda Anisimova practicing, and the sort of court behind us to our left, we had Naomi Osaka practicing at the same time. Just trying to get a little sneak peek. Osaka was in a full black tracksuit practicing in 30-degree heat.
Mm. And Anisimova was practicing backhands, and Matt turned around and said, you don't need to practice those. Right then, that is it, I think, for day four of the Australian Open. It's been a really buzzing day. We've loved it. Matt is playing tennis in 7 hours and 21 minutes. So we'd better get this show off the road.
Tennis on artificial grass.
Yes.
Oh, can I come?
David's favourite.
Yeah. You've got 7 hours and 21 minutes to get here, David. See what you can do. Charlie, the lovely beagle, is our mascot for the Australian Open. And we are delighted to have him. Hello, Charlie. We are loving all of your content. Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss as her mascot. Well, the other way around, isn't it? Billie Jean. Who's mascot to who? Billie Jean is Billie Jean King and Alana's. I've said Billie Jean too many times now.
They're just a dream team, Catherine. That's
dream
all
team. They're just one big dream team. Darwin is your mascot, David. Can't believe you got 40 points for Towson. That feels like too many.
Go on, Darwin.
Let's not talk about how Carter and I are getting on. Gerald the Cat and Matt.
Also bad.
Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner are our top blokes and executive producers. And we have some shout-outs, Matt.
We have John Aberdeen.
Ooh!
From Aberdeen?
No, from Arlington, Massachusetts.
Oh. Or is there an Aberdeen in Massachusetts? That sometimes happens, doesn't it?
I don't think you want to be called after where you live. That's weird, isn't it? David Solihull.
I wouldn't mind. John, thanks ever so much for your support.
Thank you, John.
And he says, David may be interested to know that I'm a graduate of Albion College in Albion, Michigan.
I am. I need to Google this. Oh, fantastic.
Isn't that good, John? We also have Ian Farrand from Winchester.
Hello, Hi, Ian. Winchester's sort of round our way.
Mm.
I've been to Winchester.
Oh, lovely. Ian, thanks ever so much.
Ian says, I've estimated that over 2021, I cycled around 1,300 miles with you keeping me company.
Oh, you're a legend, Ian.
Nice one, Ian. Thanks very much.
And finally, tonight we have Matthias Caro from Munich.
Right,
hello,
Matthias.
There must be some tennis players called Matthias. Maybe there aren't. Okay.
There's a good tournament in Munich. There still is, isn't there? The one on clay in April.
Yeah.
Oh, nice place. I went to Munich on a holiday a few years ago and toured the Allianz Arena, and it was lovely. Oh, great memories. Thanks ever so much for your support.
Thank you, Matthias, for your support. Thank you for all the friends of the podcast that have made it possible for Matt and I to get sunburnt in Australia. I'm speaking for myself, not Matt. I missed a spot with the sun cream, So we'll endeavour to do better tomorrow. It's been quite a day, and the schedule tomorrow is brilliant. So let's get some sleep. Let's do it all again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.